Welcome to another episode of the Nanolife Science Institute podcast, offering updates of the latest news and research at the Institute. The Nanolife Science Institute at Kanazawa University was established in 2017 as part of the World Premier Institute Research Center Initiative of the Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science and Technology, MEXT. Scientists at the NanoLSI are combining their cutting-edge expertise in scanning probe microscopy to establish nanoendoscopic techniques to directly image, analyze, and manipulate biomolecules for insights into mechanisms governing life phenomena such as diseases. In today's episode, we are joined by Professor Alexander Mikhailov. Alexander Mikhailov is an overseas-based principal investigator at the WPI NanoLSI at Kanazawa University. He is also at the Department of Physical Chemistry in the Fritz Haber Institute in Berlin. At Kanazawa's NanoLSI, his research is focused on the dynamics of active biological matter at the nanoscale, with special emphasis on molecular machines. Hello, Alexander, and welcome to the NanoLSI podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I'd like to start by asking you if you can give us an overview of your research activities both here in Japan and in Berlin.
Well, I am a physicist and a theoretical physicist, but I would say that now I work mostly as an applied mathematician. So I like very much to talk with people, to trying to understand what they need, what are their problems, and together with them we develop some descriptions, mathematical descriptions, so building the models, analyzing them. And that's because I'm more a mathematician, I also work in very different fields. So I currently have almost 10,000 citations. And when I look, say, who cites my publications, well, they are very different people. Some working on social systems, others on corrosion of metals, on inorganic physical chemistry, biophysics, of course, also. So, and this is, this does not mean, of course, that I am a specialist in all these fields, but I have worked with people who are experts in such fields, yes. Of course, there is also my own profession, and this profession is theoretical physics. There is a field where I'm also an expert, not as a mathematician, but as a scientist.
That's very interesting. I was just wondering what triggered your interest in theoretical physics. If you go back to your student days, perhaps, or maybe even high school days, was there a person, an invention, an idea? What led you to do what you're doing now?
Well, this is, of course, a very interesting question because I come from Moscow. So we have moved from Moscow to Germany 30 years ago. But before that, I was in Moscow. And as a schoolboy, I was in a special school founded by academician Kolmogorov, a famous mathematician. So he was lecturing there in this boarding school, and his co-workers were giving classes. And most of the other children in my pupils in my class, they went to study mathematics, but actually I have chosen physics after that. And when I have moved to start study physics at the University of Moscow, Landau was still alive. So I was very much interested in theoretical physics, and I have entered the section to which he has belonged. He was already dead at that time, but his students were all there, former students, now of course professors, and so I had my first scientific publication at the age of 23. when I was still a student, say undergraduate student. So originally, it was more physics of condensed matter, and only when I had started to work on my PhD, then I had moved to study non-equilibrium systems, still say magnetic systems, but later on chemical systems and biological systems as well. And as I have said, also more kind of problems in the network science, the theory of complex systems, which belong more to mathematics.
And what would you say were some of the highlights and memorable moments of your research and career so far?
I don't know. Well, there are, of course, various things. I have a very prestigious award. I have an international Solvay chair in chemistry, granted by the Solvay Institutes in Brussels. But a very important thing for me was that I have worked for many years with Professor Gerhard Hertel in Berlin. And he has got a Nobel Prize for his studies of surface chemical reactions in 2008. And my group, theoretical group, has provided support to this research. So I, together with only a few other people, I accompanied Gerhard Hertel to Stockholm and attended also the ceremony, the Nobel ceremony, and the banquet. So that was my first, probably the last time when I had to wear a formal evening dress. Yes.
That sounds very exciting. And what do you recall? What memories do you have of that?
So there are two parts of this ceremony. First, a session during which the actual diploma, say, is given by the king, and everybody is excited, of course. So there are not so many Nobel laureates each year, and after that there is a banquet, and this banquet is in the city hall, so it is attended by also by students, chosen by a kind of lottery. But even all students, they have to wear this, say, evening dress, of course. And you chat, and then there are some speeches in official, kind of more free form speeches by the Nobel laureates, the king and the queen are there, all the prime minister and so on.
Sounds like a unique, really enjoyable and unforgettable experience. Can I now ask you about COVID-19 and how it's affected the research in Germany, perhaps even at your institute? How are scientists coping with the pandemic? Are they able to continue their research and publish and so on?
Situation generally in Germany, in Europe, also in the United States, is more hard as compared to Japan. Currently, all shops are closed, all restaurants are closed, theaters, everything. And in the institute, for some period of time, the institute was closed also, shut down. Now it's open and people work, but still many work at home whenever possible, including me, actually. I'm a theoretician, I can easily do this. If you need to come to the institute, there are special procedures. Particularly, it's not allowed that two people are together at the same time in an office. So, because the infection is also spread as aerosol, the institute has purchased air filters, CO2 detectors. There are special regulations. So, of course, this has an effect on the scientific activities in the institute, but still the work continues, the experiments go on. Now we have learned how much can be done also online with Zoom and such things. And I think this will probably even remain after this pandemic, say, is over.
It's a really challenging time for researchers everywhere, I think, in any country. Okay, can we move on to some specific topics related to research and start by asking you how you're finding life in Japan in terms of working with colleagues here?
Well, first I should say that I have a long history of contacts with Japan. I was involved in various bilateral projects and projects between the European Union in Japan for more than 20 years. And in my group also in Berlin, there were many Japanese postdocs. They had seven Japanese postdocs, each spending at least 1 year in my group. And I have been many times in Japan also. I had a full master course to the Department of Physics of the Kyoto University in 2010. I have been had collaborations with the Hokkaido University and also Hiroshima. So Kanazawa is a very nice city, and I like it very much. It's very atmospheric. So you really are, you so much space and still deep traditions, some quarters with old wooden houses. So I enjoy very much being here. Also, maybe people do not expect this, but so much snow, the mountain, snow not only in the mountains, but also in the city itself. Yeah, so people tend to think that the snow is somewhere in Sapporo, you have to go to Hokkaido, maybe, especially people who are not Japanese. No, actually, this is different.
And more specifically, let's talk about Kanazawa. How are you finding research here?
For me, it was quite natural because I have worked, or my group has worked with the experimentalists for many years in Berlin, and that was also surface science. So we even had also scanning tunneling microscopy, AFM, atomic force microscopy in our department. And there were even observations, real-time observations of atoms moving really over the surface. So kind of life on the surfaces could be observed also by some methods of electron microscopy, photoemission electron microscopy. So I was also, in parallel to that, much interested in biological problems. And so for me, it was quite natural to come to Kanazawa. I knew about the research on high-speed atomic force microscopy, its applications to biological systems. And I have always thought, well, this is fantastic. Well, some time ago, we all have believed it would be never possible to see molecular motors or all these molecules, biological molecules, in operation in real time. So only some indirect measurements are possible. But now it's fantastic. You can really say many things can be answered immediately. You need just to look at what happens, and then some hypotheses or models can be rejected, or maybe you can get some idea, say, in what direction you should go when you try to model. I was happy to come to Kanazawa. I was also among the applicants for this whole project, WPI project. And now we try to, as in Berlin, we try to provide theoretical support to the experimental research here. I have brought together with me my former student, who is an assistant professor. I spend here only 3 months per year, but he's permanently here. And what we do is we help the experimentalists in the analysis of data, but also in the interpretation of data. And we try also, well, we have some discussions, and as a result of these discussions, sometimes we can also suggest new kinds of experiments. We say, oh, that might be an interesting problem to look at.
And any specific projects that you are pursuing here?
We have a nice modeling of a molecular motor for the experiments with the molecular motor myosin. Say, the experiments are very nice. In this experiment, they say normally for the iteration of this motor, you need the fuel, the chemical fuel, the molecules ATP. But they have developed some methods of interactive atomic force microscopy. So when they can apply perturbations at precise time moments to single molecules, and they have shown that by applying such perturbations, they can induce the translational motion, the walking of a single myosin motor or over the actin filament. So in this case, the energy is supplied not in the chemical form, but with mechanical perturbations, yes? So this had to be understood, and we have spent some time, and now there is a very nice model. The results have been reported at the annual meeting of the Biophysical Society of Japan a year ago.
A slightly general question. I'm wondering what the overall relevance is of the research here. If you think about it sort of in terms of contributions to society and those sort of aspects.
Well, this is, of course, a question which has many facets. This institute and this whole WPI project is very important for Kanazawa, for the city of Kanazawa, for the University of Kanazawa. Kanazawa for many years have been kind of isolated. It was not so easy to reach Kanazawa by train and so on. Now, of course, when there is Shinkansen, and it gets connected, but then there are so many tourists. But scientifically, maybe, I don't know, of course, I'm here only for some time, but I think that like Kanazawa was more also kind of, I don't know, separated from, not so well connected or linked to scientifically, perhaps. And now to the scientific life kind of outside. And now, of course, when there is such an institute, It's very important because it's international, because so many people would come and maybe this will also further foster development of scientific research in this region. Yes.
Yes, the new Shinkansen link has made Kanazawa extremely accessible.
Yes. Now it's fantastic. It's 2.5 hours to Tokyo, 3 hours by Thunderbird to Osaka.
And finally, what are your plans for the future? What types of research are you thinking about?
Well, of course, I also continue research in Berlin, and there we have also a large project together with the experimentalists. I have also a research Kakenhe grant in Japan, and I have collaborations in this grant with people from the Chiba University, Tohoku University, Tokyo Metropolitan University, for instance. I'm interested in various things, and we certainly will continue to theoretically study single molecules, molecular motors. I think also that more should be done at the cellular level. Also, because in our institute, we have cancer research, life science. So this is not just biophysics of single molecules, but a higher level, a higher structural level, the level of the cell. And theoreticians can do can also do much at this level, at the level which is a bit higher. So I myself, I also kind of want to go a little bit further in this direction, yeah, to the higher structural level, to the level of the entire cell.
And finally, what are you looking forward to when COVID does finally disappear and we can travel again?
Well, you know, we already start to think of what would come after the pandemic is over. And at the moment, our institute and I particularly, we want to organize a conference today, conference in Berlin, so that our principal investigators can come there. So we still do not know, of course, what would be the situation, we plan this next year. But even now, we have started to do some organization, to have booked a conference hall for St. Pauli. So life goes on, of course, and everybody hopes that later this year, the situation improves.
That was Professor Alexander Mikhailov, a principal investigator at the WPI NanoLSI at Kanazawa University, talking about his research there and also with colleagues in other parts of the world. Details about the WPI NanoLife Science Institute at Kanazawa University can be found by visiting the NanoLSI website. The NanoLSI podcast is produced by the Public Affairs section of the WPI NanoLife Science Institute at Kanazawa University in Japan. We look forward to your company again for the next episode of the NanoLSI podcast.